Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is Rebecca Reinhardt, and it should be dialing soon. At least, hopefully.
Hello,
Rebecca.
Yeah,
this is Mac. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, is it okay if I'm on speaker or?
Well, I don't think it would hurt anything because I've had people be on speaker before.
Okay. Just if you can hear me right now, then we're good.
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. And so we should be on the air.
All right.
Yes, it doesn't always happen that way. Sometimes it doesn't get on the air for whatever reason. So I'll just jump right in. When did you first realize that you wanted to get into filmmaking?
kind of a long story, but I've always been a fan.
Oh, that's okay.
And but I always had a different career. I was in IT in education for 20 years, and then I kind of had a little change of pace in my life and decided that I was kind of going to put myself out there. Like, I started doing podcasts and had a YouTube channel, and I got really involved in the horror scene and started writing for some sites and started covering some things, like some cons, film festivals or whatever. And I got really, intimate with some of these filmmakers that I was like, oh, it's not as I don't want to use the word difficult, but it's not as exclusive as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was just kind of I think I can do this. And after, it kind of started because, I'd interview these filmmakers, and then some of them started, being like, hey, I'll put you in my movie. So then I, would kind of do cameos, really small roles and some of this stuff. And then I started getting on set and started realizing that it wasn't as cumbersome. Again, these are words that I use lightly, but cumbersome as I thought it was, because it is cumbersome, but it wasn't as elaborate as I thought it was. And so it's only been about a year since I did my first little cameo thing. It's been less than a year since I decided to make my own movie. So it's been a fast track.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And, there's lots of late bloomers in the film industry, so it's not like you're alone.
Oh, no. No, and in fact, it's one of the things that kind of gave me a little, hope. So one of my friends, Jeff Seaman, he is in his late 40s, and only recently, maybe in the last 5, 6, 7 years, had started getting into filmmaking. Had never had an interest in it, had never, pursued it or anything. And he's directing his first feature this year. So, whatever. There's not a time limit. You can switch gears anytime you want, really.
Well, yeah. I mean, even in your 60s, 70s, and 80s, there have been actors that started acting in their 80s. And you've got a long way to get there.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. Now, me, I don't have that long to get there. Well, 20 years, but I'm a lot closer to it than you are.
not as far as you think, but yeah.
So tell us about that YouTube channel of yours.
So my YouTube channel is called The Not Quite Final Girl, and I started it because I am a huge slasher fan, predominantly 80s slashers. That's my jam. And I think it started initially because I was watching Friday the 13th, part one, and I realize that I just sit there and talk to the screen and I say the same things every time. And I know things about these people that I kind of filled in their backstories, all these people that people would consider throwaway characters. Everybody knows the final girl and the bad guy, but
right.
Nobody really cares too much about all the other people in between. And so my idea was to highlight the girls who didn't make it to final girl status, and kind of give them a little bit of time in the limelight. And so I started my channel doing that. Like I would do videos where I would pick somebody, and then I do, you know, I've researched the actress or actresses that played the role, kind of go through their whole timeline and not really like pay too much attention to the movie itself, but actually like tell the character story as I saw it. And that takes a lot of time and prep. So I'm not good about doing that anymore. But I still have my channel, and I do a lot of interviews with people, and also I do drunken commentaries, which have become quite popular for whatever reason. So the story behind that is that a few months ago, it was Saturday night several months ago. It was a Saturday night. I was drunk. I wanted to watch Sleepaway Camp 2. And I was like texting all my friends, hey, you want to like, you know, FaceTime, you know, and like watch this movie. And everybody was like too busy. And I was like, well, forget it then. I'm going to do it on my own. And I'm going to have a camera rolling and I'll talk to the camera. And then after I posted it, of course, everybody's like, oh, I want to do one of those with you. And I'm like, no. Drunken commentary was born out of the fact that none of you wanted to watch something with me. So it was pretty much a solo endeavor. I've recently started incorporating non-human hosts because my dog Snickers is in most of them. She's my co-host for most of them. But that's kind of where the channel has gone now.
Aww.
Yeah. Just me and Snickers watching movies.
Aww. Snickers like the candy?
Yeah, I didn't name her. When we got her, she had that name, but kind of her eye, she's got like a patchy eye. It's kind of, I guess, looks like nougat to somebody.
Aw, I love dogs. Well, I love cats, too. I love all animals. Well, let me put it this way. I wouldn't necessarily want all animals in my home. But I love animals.
Yeah, I'm really allergic to cats. I don't hate cats. I hate what cats represent because I'm really allergic to them. But I'm a dog girl, for sure.
And what's really interesting, it's not really that interesting to me, but my housemate, she finds it very interesting that I have all these allergies because I do. I have tons and tons of allergies, but I'm not allergic to cats.
That is kind of weird, actually, because that's probably one of the more common ones.
Well, because what it is it's not really an allergy. It's something like what actually people that have no allergies might have happen. Like if you pet an animal of whatever kind, and then you immediately put your face to your eyes, it might make your eyes water because you're not supposed to do that. So
yeah.
That would really be the only way that I would have a reaction is if I petted my cat and then I touched my face for whatever reason. And I don't do that even with my own cat. Before I touch my face, I wash my hands after I pet my cat.
Yeah. Oh, gotcha there.
Well, getting back to you, your first IMDb credit was in 2016, that you acted in Slumber Party, Slaughter Party. Tell us about that.
Okay, it is a 2016 movie, but I befriended Dwayne Etheridge, who is the director of that, and I actually was cast initially, the first thing that I was ever cast with him is the sequel to that, and that would have been last year.
Oh,
and then, I'm in Indiana, he's in North Carolina, and we were supposed to do my scenes early June, and I was going to drive there, and some of the states in between, you know, just within my driving path, you know, were starting to have, issues with people coming in and out of the boundaries of the states.
Right.
And I was like, okay, so I couldn't do it. So, he was kind of working on beefing up the original, kind of to set up for some of the stuff in the sequel, like just to kind of like set up the killer for the sequel and whatnot. And so he's making this director's cut that had some additional scenes. And so he enlisted me to do that because the scene that I did was remote. It was like a, you know, like a face chat Zoom kind of thing with the killer. And so that's, yeah, so that's how I got into that. So I'm really just in the director's cut. I did make it to the back of the DVD cover, but I was not in the original. But since then, I actually, I'm cast in several things, and hopefully all of them will happen. So next year, I should be in at least two things of his. So the one I'm really looking forward to is Bloody Hooker Massacre, which... he gave me the script and then said, hey, do any of these characters like stand out to you? And I had been cast as the hooker in so many things over the last year that I was like, can I be the police psychiatrist? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, oh, thank you. So I'm actually not a hooker or a victim. I am the police shrink in that movie. So then I have a couple other things that I've done with him just like during COVID. And then I have another movie that I'm not sure what the title is yet, but yeah, so he's a good guy.
Well, since you already mentioned the sequel to the Slumber Party Slaughter Party, is there anything that you can tell us about the new one other than it's a continuation of the first one?
Yeah, not really, just because, you know, I was only going to be in like I was kind of the cold open in that, what I was going to do. So I never really even saw the full script. I mean, I do know Julian Prescott's in it. And I think Brink Stevens is in it. It should be pretty cool. I'm kind of jealous that I didn't end up getting to be in it, but yeah, I think it'll be pretty awesome though. Definitely worth checking out.
Oh yeah, well, if it's got you and Brink Stevens in it, that alone makes it worth watching.
yeah.
Well, you know, you are worth watching. You're a very good actress, so that's why people want you in their movies. Oh, let me see what was I going to ask you about? Oh yeah, the Clown Alley horror review. yeah, you did an episode of that. Oh, you're laughing already, so it must be a good story. Let's hear it.
No, I mean, it's okay. It's an okay story. So I do have an OnlyFans site, and one of the creators of that show is one of my subs, and he knows I'm really into horror. And like the show that he does is the Clown Alley Review. It's like super like crazy psycho clowns, very horror based, and just kind of almost like a variety show. And he knew I was super into Friday the 13th. Like that's my fashion. And so he had asked me if he paid me through OnlyFans, would I do like a striptease like as Jason, like. And so that's where that came from. I basically did a striptease with like my Jason mask and, you know, my butcher knife and everything else. It was fun.
That's funny. Oh, okay. Well, actually 2020 is when you did a lot of stuff. You did a short called Should We Be Doing This? And not only did you act in it, you were also an editor, and editors are very important to movies. So tell us about this movie.
Okay, so I guess I should say that, like, yeah, right now I'm actually editing my first feature, The Embalmers. And in The Embalmers, I have an actress that her name is Johnny Shandor. She is now 9 years old. I met her at a convention when she was 8. So a year or so ago. And we were both in line to do a photo op with Melissa Rose. And here comes this little girl, and she's got on her little Camp Arawak shirt. And I was like, hey, you know. And then I was like, hey, you like horror movies? Yeah. And I'm like, what's your favorite horror movie? And she's like, I don't know, but I just know I can't watch Indonesian doll movies anymore because they're really freaking me out. And then, like, later that night, she gets up on stage for karaoke and starts doing, like, Kisses Rock and Roll All Night. And I'm like, she's so awesome, you know. So she became my friend. I was friends with her before I even knew her parents. But so definitely when I, you know, started doing movies, I was like, I got to, you know, I'm going to put Johnny in a movie because she is an actress as well. She's actually one you might want to get on the show. She's pretty awesome. But so Johnny also is a writer and a director. And she's actually working on her first feature film that my sister and I are producing. But the Should We Be Doing This was a short for, I think it was for like a festival or, you know, one of these like 24-hour film contests or something. I don't even remember. But she came up with the whole concept. She wrote it. And it was, you know, all based around like, you know, a bunch of friends on a Zoom call. It was really a lot of us from the Embalmers. And so it was kind of like based around like, oh, we're kind of getting on a call for like a work thing and like stuff starts happening. So I edited that one for her, but she since then has done another one that I was in called There's an Alien in My Backyard. And she actually won a couple of awards for that one. And
wow.
Yeah, she did that one pretty much all on her own. So yeah, she's very talented young lady.
Sounds like it. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And she's so young and she's done all that.
Yeah. And actually the quarantine's kind of been good for her because, I mean, she is an actress, but like she hadn't had a whole lot of training. And so she did a lot of online like classes for like, you know, acting classes, how to do, you know, self-tape auditions, you know, even like singing, everything else. She's just done like a million online classes since quarantine. It's amazing.
Wow. Wow, she does sound amazing.
Yeah, she's pretty cool. You should look her up.
Yeah, I think I will now that you mentioned her.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. Now, same year, obviously, you also did at least part of an anthology. You directed and you were a contributing writer and you also acted. Fright Vision. So tell us about your particular part, or you can also tell us about the rest of it, too.
Well, so Fright Vision is an anthology from Brad Twigg, who is an independent filmmaker out of West Virginia. And actually, he had messaged me and said, hey, do you want to be in one of my movies? And he was crowdfunding for a movie called Shriek Show at the time. And it was really interesting to me. And I was like, oh, do you want me to be in Shriek Show? And he's like, well, that wasn't what I was going to ask you to do, but, sure. You know? And, my friend, Julian Prescott, basically he had done the same thing to her and she said the same thing to him. And so, he brought us out there to do, they wrote a little scene for us, the two of us, for Shriek Show. And then we also did some stuff for what was supposed to be Fright Vision. We did a whole short for the anthology. Well, that ended up getting cut from the short or from the anthology. It's going to go into a different one. Cause it just didn't really fit. But then when I got back home, he was like, hey, I see you have this horror hostess character. Her name's Dr. Bubenstein. He was like, would Dr. Bubenstein want to do like the wraparounds, you know, like the introductions to the different segments. I'm like, well, sure. So it was really her second paid gig. Faces of the Dead was her first movie. But yeah, so Dr. Rubenstein basically hosts the anthology of Fright Vision. And probably one of the crowning achievements of 2020 for me was he sent me like a picture of like an Elvira thing, Elvira cover. She's sitting in a theater seat, you know, like watching a movie. He's like, hey, can you do a couple poses like this for me? Blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. So I took some pictures and then he came back and like his artist like had done Dr. Boobenstein, like Elvira, you know, in the, you know, with the seats and the popcorn and, you know, like little ghouls behind her. And I was like, I'm on the cover.
Aww.
So, yeah, so that was pretty exciting. So I look forward to working with Brad more. He's a pretty awesome filmmaker. So, and Dr. Boobenstein has all kinds of stuff coming on, coming up. So she's a busy girl.
And she, and she started in the Faces of the Dead, right? And then there was
that
another
was
one. I'm sorry, go ahead.
That was the first movie. She really kind of came to pass like last year around Thanksgiving. I just did a YouTube like Thanksgiving special, like horror hostess
mm-hmm.
special, and I kind of came up with the character, just you know, because I just can't, you know, I just can't not do everything when I do this kind of stuff. But then when it came down to it, people started asking me like, you know, would you want to do a horror hostess thing? It's like, well, I have a character, and then that's how it all started. Of like these people
uh-huh.
just kind of like. They were like, would you want to be a horror hostess? And I'm like, well, I kind of am. And here she is. I had some like footage of like some fake auditions and stuff that I had done for her. And yeah, so she's up and coming. She's got a Roku channel show coming up in January.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Wow. That's
she's
exciting.
Definitely more popular than I am.
Well, ask Cassandra Peterson about that.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. Well, you know how guys are. Well, not just guys. I mean, I'm sure that women like it too. Because, like, I liked Elvira, not for the same reason as a guy liked it. I just thought she was funny.
Yeah, she's funny and definitely like an inspiration, obviously, if you look at the character that I have. I mean, she's Vampira, Morticia Adams, Elvira, everybody, like, you know, all the cool chicks all kind of have the same look. Pale skin, dark hair, black shirt, black dress, you know, cut way low.
And so the character is like funny. Mm-hmm. Does it in a funny way. Yeah, I probably would like that then. I'm going to have to check
yeah,
it out.
Yeah, she's from Romania. I have a whole backstory for her. She has a whole backstory. I'm sorry. She's Dr. Boobenstein, and she teaches at the Transylvania University, which Transylvania University in Lexington, Kentucky, is a small private college. Yeah. So she has this weird, nondescript Eastern European accent and has a very, like, deadpan kind of humor and very sarcastic, very much my personality in a, you know, in a just a different package.
That sounds like something that I would like. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah.
Now, another thing you did was called, it was a TV miniseries, I think, Innocent Inquiries, that you acted in and you're a co-writer. So tell us about that.
So this is something still in the works. It got a little derailed
okay.
by COVID, like everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But I started working with a filmmaker named, and I'm going to say it wrong. It's Shandon. I can't even say his last name. Sorry, Shan. It's an Indian last name, and I can't say it. But he had, you know, he had these ideas, like these really short, kind of funny things. But he felt like he couldn't put the American, you know, because he is from India, and he felt like he couldn't put like the American stamp on them to make them funny for an American audience. And he had kind of like, you know, six or seven like of these little, very short ideas.
Mm-hmm.
But he just couldn't quite express in a way that he thought that Americans would appreciate them. So that we did do the first one, and I did that with Johnny Sandor. She was my daughter in this. Very short, very just – and so basically I kind of came up with the idea of Innocent Inquiries because he had all those short ideas. And I said, well, what if we base them all around a question, like a seemingly – innocent question And then that's what the short is about. Kind of like Woody Allen's Everything You Wanted to Know About Sex But Were Afraid to Ask was kind of the inspiration for that. So, like, you know, the first one's like, how was I born? You know, and I just, he had this concept, you know, a kid, you know, asking that question, and the mom gives a really outlandish answer, you know. So we're just, each one of them will have a different question behind them. It's just like, you know, I can't even remember half of them, but like, am I racist is one. Do opposites really attract? Like, just, you know, I guess these are little not spoilers, but little hints. And so each one will be a different question. So again, we got a little derailed because of COVID, but hopefully we'll be able to pick those back up pretty soon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is sad that a lot of things are getting put back because of COVID. But the good thing about it is that once it is, some of the stuff is lifted, most people will be having lots of stuff coming out because they were doing so much here and there and doing what they could. And most people now are doing the remote stuff because otherwise they can't work.
Yeah. Right. And I mean, really, if you think about it, like, I mean, like the phone that I'm on right now is an iPhone 11. I mean, the camera on this is, it shoots just as well as a really good DSLR, and you can get apps that can kind of, you know, adjust some things or whatever. And especially if you're talking about just stationary type things, like, you know, where the camera, it's just the camera, the camera's not moving. And so a lot of people have been able to come up with some pretty cool ideas. I think we're all going to be sick of seeing Zoom meetings in our horror movies in the next few months when they all come out. But, I mean, you can't really stop creativity. I found that so many people are just, they can't not do something. And so it's like, okay, we're going to do something the way that we can do it. And I will say in the last few months, I have been on set for quite a few movies, and, you know, precautions have been taken. It's been a little weird. It's felt a little dicey, but nobody's gotten sick on any of them, thankfully. And we've been able to actually, like, you know, get some content and start pushing some stuff out. So.
Well, that's good. Good. I'm glad that you're at least being able to work, because that helps not only your resume, it also helps your pocketbook.
Well, there's not a whole lot of money in this.
What I started to say just right there at the end was, hopefully.
Yeah.
And with like what you say, with the creativity, not being paid isn't going to hold you back because you want to do it anyway. I mean, you hope to get paid and you should get paid, but you're going to do it because you love it.
Right. And that was part of the draw. It's like, could I try to, you know, take acting lessons and get, you know, and I've had, you know, professional like acting coaches like offer me free lessons. And I'm like, I haven't had time to do them. And I'm like, I'm kind of content in this world of like low budget horror. This is like where my passion is. I don't really have aspirations to go beyond that because this is my, I don't want to say my comfort zone, but this is my happy place. This is where I feel like my people live. This is my tribe kind of thing.
Yeah.
And no, there's not a lot of money in it. We all just kind of pass money back and forth. I mean, you know, somebody gives to one of my Indiegogos and then I give to theirs. And it's like, we're just basically passing the same $50 back and forth, you know?
Right.
But it's more about the passion and the dedication and the creativity than trying to make a buck. I mean, and let's face it, right now, like people who work in, this is not the word I want to use, but I still will, legit, you know, cinema, they're not working right now because there are too many regulations. It's really hard if you're on a SAG set to try to get around all the COVID stuff and try to navigate that But indie people are figuring ways around it because we don't have the quote unquote rules.
Yeah, like you say, quote unquote, because you still follow the guidelines as far as COVID,
right?
But the
right.
The other stuff, you find ways around it.
Well, right, because like I mean, for example, like you know, a SAG set, like. People have to be tested every, I can't even remember what it is, like every 3 days. Well, what? You have 20, 30 people on your set, and you have to get them swabbed every few days. First of all, you have to take the time out to do it. And secondly, if one person tests positive, okay, you get shut down. But the fact of the matter is if they test positive in the middle of filming, then everybody's been exposed. So it really doesn't, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I'm not saying that I disagree with that per se, but I think just taking the precautions is probably just as effective as some of the redundancy that that SAG has right now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Hollywood has a tendency to go overboard with lots of things, so...
I mean, they are there to protect their actors, and and keep them out of harm and that type of stuff. But we all want things to go back to normal, but things won't go back to normal if we don't, you know, be vigilant about things too. So it's a fine balance.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it, too. I get why they do it, but it also makes it harder on everyone, not just the actors, but for everybody else that's involved in a movie, because you got your writers and your directors and everybody else that's involved in a movie, and everything comes to a grinding halt for the littlest thing.
Yeah, I mean... But, I mean, really, when it all comes down to it, I mean, they are just movies. And so it's like you don't want to risk people's actual, like, health and lives for that kind of thing. Same thing with the restaurant business. And I feel sorry for everybody who, like, makes their living in the restaurant business. And it's been hell. But the fact of the matter is people don't need restaurants to eat. I mean, it is a luxury. And so there should be no reason for people to, like, actually get sick and die because they didn't want to cook at home.
Right. Yeah. Well, don't take me wrong. I'm one of the biggest people that says, wear your mask and follow the rules. And I get upset at people, and I've yelled at people for not wearing their mask. I mean, because you're going out in public – and, yeah, okay, well, I just got tested, blah, blah, blah. Well, for one thing, even if that's true, I don't know you. I don't know if you really got tested. And even if you did test negative, there are people right now that are dead because they tested positive the first time, negative the first time, tested negative a second time, and then the third time they were positive, and then they ended up dying.
Yeah.
I mean, that's happened with famous people. Nick Cordero was one of those. He tested negative, then he was positive, now he's dead.
Yeah.
So you're not only possibly hurting yourself, but you're possibly hurting every single person you come in contact with. You're actually worse than hurting them. You're possibly killing them.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be able to live with that if that was me. And these people that are like, my rights. No, your rights are... you have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, yes, but only if it doesn't interfere with the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness of someone else. In other words, if your breathing is going to give somebody a virus that kills them, then, yeah, your rights go out the window and you wear a frickin' mask.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I have asthma, and I wear a mask. So I don't want to hear these people, oh, it's hard to breathe in a mask.
Oh, yeah.
I have asthma, and I wear the mask. And actually what I've been finding in a lot of ways being outside, because like I said, I have all these allergies, that since I started wearing a mask every time I go outside, I actually have been able to breathe better outside.
Yeah. Yep. A little bit of filter.
Yeah. Okay. So getting back to you, sorry about that. I didn't mean to go off on that.
Oh, no, that's okay. It's inevitable right now. Like, I mean, it's the elephant in the room, and it affects everything that we do, and it's kind of inevitable to have to get to that conversation.
Yeah, and it's happening to everybody. Maybe not getting it and, you know, getting sick with it and dying, but everybody now, almost everybody, maybe they don't know somebody who has had it, but they know somebody that knows somebody.
Yeah, it's affected everybody in some way, shape, or form at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, and like now with me, yes, I order a lot to have delivered, you know, like food, like what we were talking about just a minute ago. But one of the main reasons is because I'm disabled. But I also make sure that if I go to the door, which I usually do because I like to tell them that their tip is on the card so they don't think that they're not getting a tip.
Yeah.
And also, if they know they have a tip, then they'll know to look for it, because a lot of people won't put a tip on there. And then other times, the place may, you know, mess with their tip. So I always tell them. And so I always have a mask on, and I have a little table by my door where I have them set the table so they don't even have to come in contact with me at all except through the door. So that's my part. And what I do to protect them is I don't come near them. I just have them set it on the table because they are frontline workers and they are heroes. They're risking their lives. And you know that people are arguing and making a big deal about tipping these people. They don't want to tip them more than a couple of bucks. Yeah, when they're risking their lives to bring them their food. Like, no, they get a really good tip from me. And I mean a really good tip.
They're working the job they're working to keep other people at home.
Right. So that things will be safer. Because the more people that stay at home, the safer things are going to be. Yeah, not everybody can stay home. But if those people that go out just follow the rules, we would have a lot less cases than what we have now.
Yeah. For
a lot less.
Amen.
Yeah. So a little while ago, you were talking about the embalmers. Now, I don't know how much more you can say about it because it's like still in pre-production, I think. But you did do a lot for it. You're directing and executive producer and writer, and you're acting in it. Is there anything more you can tell us about the embalmers?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is my baby. So this is we actually are in post-production. I'm editing as well.
Okay.
And it's something that just kind of came out of me wanting to make a movie, my sister as well, and we just decided to do it. I did all the crowdfunding for it, you know, casting, you know, the filming, everything kind of from start to finish. And I think what we've come up with I think it's a good movie. It's not the best movie ever. Nobody's going to be like, oh, this is, you know, the best thing that ever came out. But I mean, I'm very proud, that this is my first, feature, and that it is going to be something that I think that people will enjoy. And I think that there are a few things in it that are, completely unique that hasn't been done before, or at least if it has been done before, it hasn't been done the way that we did it. So we should be, I'm about 80% done with the editing process. My composer's working on the score. So hopefully, I'm thinking like a spring release, probably like March, April, that we'll have it done, you know, all the copies sent out to backers, and hopefully, you know, knock on wood, we're thinking that we might be able to get a distribution deal and get that out there. And that's all that any of us care about, is that we get it out there and people watch it. It's not
right.
about the bottom dollar. I mean, we're not going to make, none of us are making much of anything out of this movie, but it is a labor of love. And so I'm pretty excited for everybody to see it.
Yeah, it sounds like it'll be really good, because I like those types of movies, and especially in the indie business, because I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a semi-professional reviewer, and I love reviewing independent movies. And one of the reasons is, yeah, a lot of them are bad, but so are a lot of the movies coming out of Hollywood are bad. So
yeah.
I mean, there's bad movies, there's good movies. But the good thing about me is that when I review your movie, or anybody's movie is what I'm talking about, I use a 5-star system, but I also use like partial stars, because I use quarter stars, quarter, a half, and 3/4 stars.
Right.
So, but it's a total 5-star system. And you get an automatic 1 just for the effort that you put into making the film.
Yes.
So,
and people
there's
do
no
not
way.
Know that. They do not realize the amount of blood, sweat, and tears from so many people just to get a movie made. Whether or not it is the biggest piece of crap you've ever seen, it still took a lot of work from quite a few people.
Oh, yeah. And there's always something. I shouldn't say always, almost always. I can almost always find something, at least something good in the film. Whether it's got good music, or it's got special effects, or it's got good acting, but everything else is terrible. There's always at least one thing. There's only been a couple of times I couldn't even find one good thing about
this
film.
Yeah, I mean, there are people who do just make movies just to throw them out there and almost want to be intentionally bad, and it just doesn't work. But in general, if the movie got made, then somebody had to work at that, and that's worth something.
Well, yeah, this French filmmaker, a few friends had told him about me, so he wanted me to watch his film. And, I mean, it was okay, because he asked me if I wanted it dubbed, and I said, no, that's not necessary. I speak French, so I think I would rather watch it in French, because, as you know, the dubbing isn't always correct. So,
right.
And the same thing with closed captioning, because I told him I didn't want that.
Right. Yeah.
So he was all excited, because he took, oh, somebody's going to watch my movie the way I intended it. So I said, yeah, sure, send me the film. And he sent it to me. And I don't want to say it was a terrible movie. It's not that it was a terrible movie. It was like watching somebody's acid trip.
Oh, yeah. It's a little difficult sometimes.
Which you know, some people find that exciting because, you know, they've had trips themselves, so they find that exciting. But I don't particularly find it exciting because I've never had an acid trip before. But I know, and there are people out in the audience saying, then how would you know that's what an acid trip looks like?
Yeah, really.
But seriously, though. So when I was done watching it, and I had told him I was done watching it, and he said, well, what did you think? He was so excited. He wanted to know right away what I thought. And the only good thing that I could say about the movie, and I was hoping that he wouldn't ask me for anything else, but I said, let me tell you what I really, really love about this movie. It has probably the best special effects that I have ever seen, and that is including big budget movies. And I meant every word of it, because I don't lie. If I don't like your film, I'm not going to tell you that I like your film. However, I'm going to tell you the things that I liked about it. Like, even though I may not like the movie as a whole, if you've got some great location shots, I'm going to tell you that. I'm like, wow, you got some great location shots, or wow, you got some great music, or great cinematography, or great acting. Yeah, I'm going to tell you the things I like about your film. And that's one of the reasons why people like my reviews, because that's the way I do it. I don't go looking to trash anybody.
Yeah. And it's not about a thumbs up or thumbs down kind of thing. And I'm the same way.
Right. Right. I don't just say, you know, this is a piece of crap. Okay, well, that doesn't help anybody. And everybody's got a different opinion. Personally, I don't care for war movies, but somebody else may love war movies. So if I had reviewed a movie and I'm saying, well, you know, I kind of didn't like this, but I don't like war movies. But if you like war movies, you'll probably love it. That's the kind, that's the kind of way that I write my reviews.
Yeah, no, and that's the way it should be.
Yeah, and the other thing about me, unlike a lot of reviewers, I actually watch the films that I review. I don't fast forward through them.
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of people who do that. Unfortunately, anybody who depends on reviewers for opinions, just know, some people actually watch movies like in 2x the speed just to get through it. Yeah, which is not the way the movie was intended.
Right, and plus they miss a lot of things, and you can tell that in their reviews. Because I remember as a kid, I used to do that. I would purposely watch the film first and then read the reviews to see how accurate the reviews were. And the reviews very often had nothing to do with the movies. I was like, they didn't even watch this movie. I knew that when I was a kid.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They watch just enough to do the review. Yeah.
Right. Just to say, oh, okay, I watched this. It had so-and-so in it. They figure that if they mention the actors that are in it, that makes it okay that they didn't actually watch it. Well, not in my opinion. Now, this one film, number one, I like shark films. And number two, I was kind of curious what I'm guessing at the pronunciation, shark-a-go.
Chicago.
Chicago.
Chicago,
Okay, because I wasn't sure if it was like a go, like, you know, for past tense, like it was like in past future
Shark-a-go-go.
Thing. Yeah, okay.
So this is a movie that has been put a little on hold. It's by a filmmaker named Christopher Kaler. But he's in Chicago. And he just saw these shark movies being made, Sharknado, all that stuff. And they're so far-fetched. Well, he did research and found out that, even though Lake Michigan is a freshwater lake, that sharks actually can inhabit it. And so he wanted to make a movie where there are sharks in Lake Michigan and they're, you know, they're terrorizing Chicago. Like, and kind of making it, almost, it sounds bad, but almost based in science. So that one is kind of on hold. It should be filming within the next year. But I actually did already do a movie from the legendary director Tim Ritter called Sharks of the Corn. And
Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's on my IMDb.
I don't think
he has IMDb on that one. But that one is, it's almost done, and it's going to be pretty awesome. But the whole idea is, you know, these people are in somewhere in the Midwest, whatever, lots of cornfields, and there are sharks, which I can't tell you how or why, but there are sharks in the cornfields, and yeah. So that one's going to be really fun.
Oh,
if you like
sure.
shark movies, it's a whole new spin on them.
And Tim Ritter is so great. I've had him on the show. And, he's great. He makes great movies, and he's got a great sense of humor about everything. And so I really like him.
And he is actually the first filmmaker that put me in one of his movies. So, So I have him to thank for all this fabulous mess that I'm in now.
Well, I'll make sure that I send him a little message and let him know that you gave him some love on the show.
Yeah.
Yes, and I gave him a little love too, I guess. Yeah. He is great. And I can hardly wait for that Sharks of the Corn.
Yes, it is going to be awesome.
So I didn't mean to interrupt you a second ago. What were you starting to say?
Oh, I don't know. I think I got everything out that I was trying to say.
Okay. Well, there is like a little bit of an overlap with the sound on Blog Talk Radio, and sometimes I can't always tell when somebody is still talking, and then I just start talking. So we still got like 9 minutes, so I think we got time to at least go over one. Now, this is one isn't on IMDb, but I saw it on your profile page for Facebook, Cannibal Call Girls from Hell. Is there anything you can tell us about that film?
So this is another one that's kind of on hold. I'm looking forward to this massively. It is by Jeremy Summerall, who is a filmmaker out of Texas. We got a decent amount of momentum from it, and then, you know, things happen, whatever. But actually, it probably would keep going. I mean, it's still going to happen, but he actually got a deal directing Sean Donahue from Gator Blade Films, his newest movie called Hellfire. So that's kind of his thing. I may be in that. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that or not, but I just kind of did. So before we do Cannibal Call Girls from Hell, Hellfire will happen.
Ooh. Okay.
And that one's less horror and a lot more kind of balls to the wall, outlandish Andy Sedaris like action kind of movie. So it's gonna be pretty cool. And I think it starts filming in February.
Oh wow, cool. I hope it does start and that things move along well and there's not too many hang-ups. So far
it looks good. So
good. We do have time for another one. So I did want to ask about this one, mainly because I like these kind of names because they're funny. Backwoods Bubba. That you're acting and you're the writer, so it's still filming according to IMDb. So what can you tell us about that one?
So that was a movie I was cast in that had a really cool story, but maybe you needed some work on the actual like the interactions between people, dialogue, that kind of stuff. So I got cast in it. And the script wasn't done, but it was, you know, 80% of the way done. And I was like, hey, can I go through and kind of, you know, change up some stuff, you know, kind of, you know, work on some of the interactions between the characters. And Brad Thomason, the director, was like, yeah, sure. And so I did, you know, a couple scenes or whatever. And I was like, is this okay? He's like, yeah, keep going. So I kind of went through and rewrote all of the, you know, left his framework in there, but kind of rewrote some of the character interactions. And we did film, principal filming was, the end of September, I believe, in Virginia. And there were a few weekend shoots before I went out there. And then there have been a couple since then. I think that all the filming is pretty much wrapped now. But it's a standard slasher. Like there's not much less than the imagination that's called Backwoods Bubba, but it is about a hillbilly slasher dude, bad guy who, likes to kidnap people and chain them up in a non-disclosed, area. A barn, a garage, something. And then when he decides that he wants to, he releases one of them. They're dressed like animals, and he goes out and hunts them. So, and I ended up playing two roles, not like at the last minute, because somebody wasn't able to do it. And mm-hmm. so I had to write in at the last minute, I had to write in like a twin story because two of the girls are me. But it worked out. It worked out. That's like the hallmark of an indie film. It's like if there's a twin, that means somebody had to do double duty. And that's me and this one. But no, we had,
that's awesome.
We had a really successful Indiegogo and a lot of support, because it's something that people want to see. You know, like, we don't have a whole lot of, like, just actual slashers that don't have, you know, some kind of supernatural element or whatever. It's like, we just haven't had those for so long that I think everybody's kind of like, yeah, let's just get a good old-fashioned, you know, running through the woods kind of slasher. And, yeah, so I think the people kind of spoke with that one.
Well, yeah, because it things do get old after a while. Like, even though I like some of those things, it just gets old after a while where, okay, they can never be killed. And, okay, that's all well and good. They can't be killed because they're, like, really a demon or something. But there's always
right.
something you can do. Why doesn't somebody think of putting them in a vat of hydrochloric acid or something?
Right. But it's like, yeah, it goes back to this is just a guy. This is just a dude who there's nothing special about him per se. He doesn't have any special powers or anything like that. He's just a psycho. And he just likes to do this to people. And there is a certain charm of just going back to the very basics of kind of slasherdom with that.
Well, yeah, when you think back on older movies, and not necessarily as old as Psycho, but even older and after, the ones that were like that, where, yeah, they had people getting killed, but the Psycho really was like the big draw to it, and not because he or she was a psycho, but because of the way that it was portrayed, like, hey, you know, this is a human being.
Right.
Unlike
this is not,
unlike
this
now,
is not some resurrected
demon
or a ghost or, like, you know, some kind of thing that people can kind of hide behind and be like, oh, it's not real because blah, blah, blah. No, this is some guy, some messed up guy who runs a hotel. The hotel you might
yeah.
be staying at. Yeah. I mean, there's a certain appeal of that.
Yeah. And when you see that he's such a nice guy, and how many nice people have you met over the years? And you're like,
right.
you thought they were nice, and then you only saw them, you know, that one time, and then you find yourself thinking, I wonder if he's really a psycho.
Yeah, that movie kind of probably did, like, some not favors for a lot of people, yes.
And sometimes you can't help but think about that. If you go to a motel and it's like that
oh,
motel
yeah.
where there's little cabins.
Yeah, like, yeah, somebody watching me.
Well, actually, we've only got actually less than 90 seconds. So if you want to quickly tell people how they could get a hold of you, if you want them to get a hold of you, what's the best way?
I'm on Facebook. It's Rebecca Reinhart, R-I-N-E-H-A-R-T. And you can join our group, The Embalmers, for our movie. I'm also on Instagram at Jason's Girl 1976. And I'm kind of a little bit of everywhere. But yeah, you can also look me up on IMDb and look at some of the titles that we've talked about and start following some of those movies.
Okay. And now, is there anything else that you want to say in closing?
No, just thanks for having me on.
Oh, well, you're welcome, and thank you for being on. You're very entertaining and very interesting, and maybe sometime in the future you can come back. And now we're almost out of time, so I want to say stay safe, and I wish you much success in the future, and have a good night, and goodbye.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.